This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture and I'm Kelly Anissa. Between 2014 and 2017, a total of 15,617 cases of domestic violence were reported in Malaysia. While women, men, boys and girls can be victims of domestic violence, women and girls are disproportionately affected. Nilambika is a survivor of domestic violence who has now summoned the courage to speak up and share her story publicly. She is here with us on the show today to share her experience and talk to us about her new book titled Taking Charge of My Life. Welcome to the show, Nilam.
Thank you.
So before we get started on all of that, maybe you could tell me a little bit about yourself first.
Okay, I'm retired now and I've worked in the corporate sector, first starting with an international bank, and then I moved on to work with a telecommunications services provider. And then I decided to leave full-time employment to work as a freelance employee. That's when I worked on a variety of jobs, like as a tour guide, as a lecturer, and as an editor. And then I decided to write a book and share my story about my experience as a survivor of domestic violence.
So, yeah, I mean, as you said, you are a survivor of domestic abuse from a previous marriage. You know, tell me about that relationship.
Okay, we dated for 3 years and then we got married. And during our dating years, there was no signs of abusive behavior. He was nice to me. He was respectful of me. And then a year and a half later, I became a mother to a baby boy. And since we were both working in KL and I had my child in Ipoh in my hometown, my mother-in-law offered to look after our son. And 2 years later, I bought a house so that my son can come and live with us. So that's when we invited my mother-in-law to come and stay with us.
And if you don't, you know, if you're comfortable with this, you know, at what point did you start to realize that the relationship was turning abusive? You know, were there any indicators? Was there ever a hint of that prior to the initial so-called trigger? You know, in hindsight, when you think back, were there ever any indicators that, you know, that the marriage would take such a turn?
Okay, the problem started when my mother-in-law came to stay with us and life was good in the beginning. She ably looked after my son. But what happened was after some time, she took over total control of our family affairs, including the upbringing of my son. And my husband pandered to her wishes and was communicating more with her than with me. He was not open to any of my suggestions or opinion. It was like as if, and I was shut out completely from the family decisions. And so I felt stifled in a family dominated by my husband and mother-in-law. And I felt frustrated. And so my mother-in-law sensed the tension between the both of us and we had a lot of arguments. So she decided to leave and she took our son back to Ipoh. And that's when my husband was very furious with me because he blamed me for his mother's unexpected and forced departure. And since my mother-in-law left, he became very critical of whatever I did, including my cooking. And the arguments continued. And then there was also financial strain in the marriage because he was unemployed for a few times and I had to be the breadwinner. And then some time later, on one occasion, my father-in-law came to stay with us and he used to drink alcohol in the evenings and talk nonsensical things to me. So after one or two occasions, it became unbearable. And so I just woke up and then I went to bed. And that's when my husband came and slapped me. And I didn't expect him to do that. And it just came as a shock to me. So I then moved out from the master bedroom to sleep on the sofa in the living room to distance myself from him. So that was the tipping point. And so with that physical abuse and the emotional abuse the years prior to that with his belittling me and critical of whatever I did, I decided to end the marriage and file for a divorce. And so while waiting for the divorce, that's when I was raped repeatedly.
And first of all, I'm very sorry to hear that. You know, what do you think would have been helpful to help you speak up sooner, you know, before, you know, during the initial stages of that abuse, during the point where it was, you know, emotional abuse?
Personally, on my side, I'm a reticent in nature. I'm reserved and I hold back my emotions and confiding in people about it. So I tend to bottle it up, all up, and just endure and try and sort it out on my own. Mm. But even with my family was there, but even with my family there, I just couldn't reach out because I think, because I was so traumatized, it was so painful that I just couldn't open up to anyone. I think even though there is support out there, I think it's something, because the emotional pain can be so traumatizing that I think it's not easy to open up and speak about it. And I think one has to be given the space and the time. And I think once you have started to heal it and accepted what has happened to you, I think it's only then that survivors are able to speak up about it. I don't think it would be easy to do so any sooner.
So during this period that, you know, all of this was happening, what happened to your son? You said, I think that you said that your mother-in-law took him back to Ipoh. At what point did he return to you?
Yes, I did. When he was about 5 years old, I urged my husband that I think it's about time that he can come and live with us on his own. And I had already arranged for a babysitter who lives a stone's throw away from my neighborhood.
Mm.
And then, but he agreed, but he set a very unreasonable condition and that I was supposed to leave my office at 5 p.m. to return home. And he knew very well that it was impossible for me to meet his demand because of my work demands at home. I then realized as I reflected upon why he set that condition that it was just a ruse because there's no way that my son would be able to come to stay with us without his mother.
Mm.
And so with that, so my son never really came to stay with us, nor did he grow up with us. And so during the time of the abuse, so I was fortunate that he was not around to witness it.
Mm. So how old was he when he came back to live with you?
He was 6 years old when his parents got divorced, but because I was the one who wanted the divorce, my husband set the conditions, and one of it was custody was to be with his mother. So there was something which I could not fight for because I was losing my mind. I just needed to salvage my sanity.
Mm.
So I had to give in to that. So I knew that my need for a divorce, for that freedom from him, came at a huge price. So he stayed with my mother-in-law and grew up in Ipoh. It was only later when his grandmother didn't want to look after him anymore,
mm.
and the father had remarried and didn't take him in to stay with him. So my son felt abandoned, and then he told me the whole story. And that's when I brought him back to stay with me when he was 12 years old.
Right. And, you know, being a survivor of domestic abuse, what would you say are some of the obstacles women in that position face when it comes to getting help and reporting these things?
As I mentioned, in my personal experience, there'll be a retaliation by your husband. He may not allow you to seek support or refuge from an organization. He will come looking for you, or he may take your life. Because what happens is that when a victim decides to to leave the abusive marriage or relationship, something triggers in the husband, you know, and that's when it becomes a very dangerous situation. And so the victim needs to know what she needs to do and be cautious and careful in trying to get the support that's required. And so that's why in my case, I knew that even though I left home to get refuge somewhere else, I knew that that would have been a futile action and he would have still have come looking for me.
I am speaking to Nilambika today and we are discussing her experience with domestic violence and her new book, Taking Charge of My Life. We will be right back after the break. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture and I'm Kelly Anissa. I am speaking to Nilambika today and we are discussing her experience with domestic violence and her new book, Taking Charge of My Life. I'm sure writing about this couldn't have been, you know, an easy process. You know, what was that like? What was that journey like telling your story?
Okay, what happened was that as much as I had moved on and rebuilt my life, I was still grappling with some of the residual emotional baggage. And I needed closure. So I have read that journaling is one way of doing so. So I wrote down my story and developed it as time went on. And of course, it wasn't an easy process because when I started recollecting the incidences, it was as if I was reliving the experience all over again. And tears welled up and it was I was emotionally exhausted going through the process. But I told myself I had to do this because I needed closure for myself. So I persevered and completed the story to publish it. And my story is not just for myself to bring closure. It is also to inspire the victims who are in an abusive marriage or a relationship to recognize that they have the power to leave such a relationship or marriage. And also to inspire survivors to move on and rebuild their lives, to lead a dignified life that they deserve. And it's also to create awareness on the ills of domestic violence. And in my story, I've also mentioned how my young son's life was affected by the divorce. So it's also a plea to the divorced couples to not use their children as pawns. Mm.
And how many years did it take for you to heal and to decide to write this book?
So I started working on it about 7 years ago. So that was in 2012. Mm-hmm. So I was divorced in 1992.
Okay.
So that took a considerable time for me to really want to put all my repressed emotions on paper. So what happened was that when I was post-divorce, I was an emotional wreck. And so my coping strategy was to repress all my emotions, okay? And then just decide to move on and rebuild my life. And as I mentioned, I needed closure for some of the internal demons that I was grappling with. So it took me some considerable time before I made a decision to want to write my story.
And now that you've published your journal, you know, what started as a journal, now that it's published and it's there for everyone to read, how does it feel to finally be able to tell, you know, your friends, your families, your colleagues about what was happening during that time? You know, how does it feel to finally come clean with it with the people you know who were there during that time, who might not have, you know, necessarily picked up on all of this?
Personally, I found it liberating because finally I've got closure and, you know, putting all those, my repressed emotions on paper felt therapeutic. And of course, I was elated that I was finally able to publish a book. you know, during my dark days, when I was going through the abuse, never did I imagine that I would one day be writing my story and publishing a book, leave alone speaking up publicly about it. So I've always believed that God works in mysterious ways, and there's something I would also like to mention here, that one of the instrumental factors in helping me to pull through in my healing process was my faith in God and how it gave me internal strength to pull through. Also, I've experienced the incredible power of the prayer. So having now published a book and sharing my story and speaking up about it, I found that my purpose in life is to perhaps help someone out there, a victim or a survivor, and also hopefully to try and eliminate or, if not, minimize the incidences of domestic violence, hopefully starting with a younger generation. And my friends who have read the book are proud and have commented that it was brave of me to write my story. So it has been gratifying for me. I have had another friend who worked with me in a telecommunications services company, and she was an expat, and we still keep in touch. So when I sent her a copy of my book, she was proud of me as well. And there's something that she shared with me is that because she had, after leaving the company on a contract basis, she should return back to America. And she came back a few years later on a visit because she just loves Malaysia. And in fact, she's more Asian than American. And so that was during the time, it was my post-divorce, and my son was back with me, growing up with me. And she commented that she had wished that she would have been a better friend to me and been there. But then I told her that wouldn't have been possible because I was really great at masking my problems and I kept it within myself. And so she's passing the book around to her friends and relatives to read it, and some of whom I've met because I had gone and visited her about 10 years ago.
Now that you've published this book, right, you know, have you seen any sort of reaction from your ex-husband? You know, has he reached out to you, or, you know, has he, you know, what does he think of the book?
I don't think my ex-husband is aware that I've published this book. And I doubt that he will reach out to me because I always believe a leopard doesn't change his spots. And anyway, that is of no... I'm not hoping for anything from him. Okay, at this point in my life, I moved on. I rebuilt my life. I'm happy where I am. And after writing this book, I'm at peace. So I wouldn't want to have any interactions with him.
In your book, you make this important distinction between being a victim and being a domestic abuse survivor. And you choose instead to identify with the latter. So, you know, why does the choice of the term matter to a person in that situation?
Personally, I think as a victim, you are someone who are still in the abusive marriage or relationship, and you may feel helpless or hopeless in not wanting to leave the marriage or relationship for various reasons. It could be because maybe you feel ashamed, or maybe because of the social stigma of being divorced, or you want to remain for the sake of the children, or maybe you are financially dependent on your husband, or you fear reprisal. So I can't fault the victims if they want to remain in an abusive relationship. But I hope by sharing my story and speaking publicly about it, I hope I can inspire them to find that power within them to leave the abusive relationship, because I feel that they deserve to lead a dignified life, which is their right, which is a basic human right. So as far as the word survivor is concerned, survivor, I feel, is someone who has come out of an abusive relationship or marriage and moved on and rebuilt a life for herself.
And, you know, with this book, you are targeting it towards those who have been in abusive relationships or who have come out, you know, as survivors of those relationships. But who else are, you know, are you also speaking to? Say, for example, if we were to look at male domestic survivors, do you think that there is something they can also take away from this book? Can they also relate to the messages that you are, that you have included, that you have written in this?
Even though my book is targeted at the women, the abuse women, I'm not discriminating against the men who are also in an abusive marriage. So I think, I'm sure they are also going through the same experience as the women. Mm. And they can also reach out to the Women's Aid Organization for support and refuge if required. But going forward, after publishing my book, I have reached out in my mission now to try and create awareness on the ills of domestic violence in the hope of trying to eliminate or reduce the incidences. My hope is now with the younger generation. So I've actually reached out to the universities where the students are studying for a Bachelor of Science in Psychology. And so to offer myself to give a talk to these students to give them a better understanding of what domestic violence is about and how it affects the victims/survivors, and hope that with their generation it can be eliminated or reduced. And I've enjoyed speaking to the young students, and it has been gratifying, and their questions have been interesting to create awareness.
Yeah, and has anyone reached out to you personally to share an experience as well during this process that you've taken to spread the message on, you know, on domestic abuse?
Not yet. I hope anyone out there who wants to, you're welcome to come up to speak to me, and I'm willing to help in any way I can or just lend a ear to you.
Mm. You know, just very quickly, what are some of the key takeaways from your book that you hope people hold on to?
Okay, one is for people to realize that the effects of domestic violence is not only felt at the time of the incident, they have lasting and devastating consequences. So it really takes years or a long time for a victim or survivor to fully heal. And secondly, resulting from how traumatic the experience can be, I hope that will create an awareness among the younger generation to try and eliminate it, because there's really no, why does a man need to abuse his wife? You know, because I believe that marriage is a partnership, and where the wife has equal rights to be treated equally, you know, emotionally and physically.
Mm.
Yeah, I think these are the two major points.
You know, we hear about marital rape here every now and then. You know, I suppose, what do you think we can do as Malaysians? You know, what will it take to confront that issue once and for all?
Marital rape has got nothing to do with race or religion. So you should not be bringing race or religion into the matter and just view it as something in the name of humanity, where the women needs to be treated with respect. If a husband wants to have sex with his wife, he needs to get consent, just as you need to when you want to have sex. You know, so marital rape is rape without consent, and it's forced sex. So I'm not sure whether it's going to get criminalized in Malaysia, but while waiting for the legislation to be passed, I'm not letting that hold me back in wanting to try and minimize or eliminate the incidences of domestic violence.
Mm. You know, for someone who managed to take charge of her life and, you know, to write a book and to share her story, you know, what advice would you give to other survivors who are trying to get back up after experiencing something like that?
I hope I've got a chapter there on the healing process that I went through myself. I hope that they can take a leaf out of the process that I went through, and perhaps it could be useful to help them in that process as well. And of course, each abuser's situation is different and unique in itself. So what I can, or what I've offered in that chapter, are my learning points, and so they can use it as a guidance to help them to heal.
I see. So what do you think will help more women come forward in the future?
I hope my story and speaking publicly about it will be the start for more women to come out and share their story. I think we need more survivors to come out and share their story. We can't just leave it to the NGOs and the women's rights groups to fight for the rights of the domestic violence survivors. Mm. So I think, I hope my book, my story, can give the courage to more survivors to come out and share their story.
And do you have a final message for those who are listening in?
Oh, well, my book is available in the bookstores and online to be purchased.
Thank you for joining me on the show today, Neelam. I've been speaking to Neelam Bika, and we were discussing her new book, Taking Charge of My Life. If you've missed any part of this interview or any Live and Learn segment, you can download the podcast on the BFM app, available on Google Play, the App Store, and also on Spotify. You've been listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.